From the National Endowment for the Arts, this is Artworks. I'm Josephine Reed.
I love the community cooperational element of theater, and I love the inspirational, aspirational element of theater. Those are the things, you know, art is the most exponentially transformative tool that we have as a culture and a community. And I think theater is an ultimate synthesis of those elements.
You just heard actor, singer, and producer Brandon Victor Dixon, a Broadway triple threat with one of the best singing voices on stage today. Here's a glimpse, and just a glimpse, of some of his work on Broadway. He's originated the roles of Harpo in The Color Purple, UB Blake in Shuffle Along, and Berry Gordy in Motown the Musical, all Tony Award-nominated performances. He assumed the role of Aaron Burr in Hamilton and starred as Judas in the live, televised version of Jesus Christ Superstar, which earned him an Emmy Award nomination. As a producer, Brandon's credits include the Broadway production of Hedwig and the Angry Inch, which won the 2014 Tony Award and the Drama Desk Award for Best Revival of a Musical. Brandon is gearing up for a one-night concert benefiting the Classical Theater of Harlem called Here for the Holidays, even as he performs in the new Alicia Keys musical, Hell's Kitchen, which is currently at New York City's Public Theater. And Hell's Kitchen is exactly where I began my conversation with Brandon Victor Dixon. Brandon, your current play at the Public Theater, Hell's Kitchen, is generating a lot of buzz. Can you tell us what attracted you to this project and a little bit about Davis, the character you play?
The primary attractions to the target for me were Michael Greif, who is an individual with whom I have a relationship.
And Michael Greif is the director.
Yes, we've worked together multiple times. And Alicia Keys and the work of Alicia Keys. I've always been a big fan of hers. And I thought the idea of her doing a musical, exploring her art in this format was going to be a success. You know, I get to play her absentee father, Davis, in the play. And, you know, really, Davis is an individual with whom both her and her mother have a complicated relationship, but a relationship that does find its balance. Davis is a musician, and he and Allie's mother, you know, they're not in a current ongoing relationship. They're not married. He lives, you know, out of the state, but they do maintain a level of contact. And, you know, when she reaches a catalytic point in her relationship with Allie, she reaches out to see if he can pay them a visit.
And just to say, Allie plays, I guess, what we would call the Alicia Keys character in Hell's Kitchen.
Yes, Allie is our Alicia Keys archetype, the young girl whom we are watched come of age in our play.
Well, one of the songs you sing, and you sing it with Shoshana Bean, who plays Allie's mother, is Not Even the King. Tell me about that experience and what it's like delivering that Alicia Keys song in front of Alicia Keys.
Well, it's a lot of fun. You know, Alicia had a very specific idea from the beginning that she wanted to approach it differently than how she does the record. And, you know, singing it with somebody like Shoshana, who's such a wonderful singer and a wonderful actress, makes it a fun number in within which we can play each evening. So
Use the word play. Are you a performer who likes to change things up, or do you prefer to kind of freeze a performance?
You know, it's interesting. I am a performer who does make adjustments and does like to alter things, or just like likes to exist in the moment. But you know, I am amongst artists who like to do that as well, even to some greater extent than I at times. So it's interesting to be the conservative amongst the group when I'm usually the commando, the outlier.
So I love knowing about artistic process, and I would really love to have you talk about what it's like to create a role. And we can use the role of Davis as an example, though Lord knows that he's hardly the only character you've created. What's it like to get these words on a page and then you literally have to put a body and a voice to it?
Every process is different, and every process requires lesser or greater building blocks to create the architecture you need within which to breathe life, right? There's a certain level of architecture you need to create that is the character, and then there's the space you have to fill it with, which is you. And sometimes that requires more, and sometimes that requires less, depending on what kind of project it is, and depending on how the project is built. You know, Davis is actually largely built on me and my interactions with Shoshana and my interactions with Malia. So, you know, just like the show, the characters are loosely based on Alicia's life. You know, the character and the circumstances of Davis are loosely based on her life. And so there are some foundational elements there. But for the most part, where we found Davis was in the room between our interactions as performers.
And Malia plays Allie.
Yes, the wonderfully talented Malia plays Allie.
Do you like to go off book early and get up on your feet? What's your comfort level in a rehearsal process?
My general process is two goes, two rehearsals with script pages in hand before I start to move off the page. Different people are different. Some people show up day one, completely memorized and things like that, and I'm not like that. But by the time we have rehearsed the scene for a second individual session, then after that is when I start to move off book.
This opened at the Public Theater, so shout out to the Public. Tell me about that opening night. I mean, the excitement must have been extraordinary.
I think so. You know, the Public's been developing the show for a long time, and Alicia is one of those artists who really has a very broad appeal, you know, a genuinely global appeal. So, you know, people have really been excited at the kinds of work that she's done over the years. And so when she moved into this space, and, you know, when it came to the Public, which is definitely known for bringing fantastic work to the city, the buzz really built in a very positive way for the show. And I think the very honest story that we have to tell, and the emotional pull of and the emotional narrative that Alicia's music naturally possesses, I think just creates a formula that people find compelling. And so, you know, we had been in previews for a couple of weeks before we opened, and by the time we opened, you know, we had pretty much well sold out, actually. And so the energy and the excitement was definitely there, and it was wonderful to at long last, you know, officially open the show to public viewing.
How do you keep a performance fresh for 8 shows a week?
You can go off the natural drive of the artistic material for a while, depending on what it is. And then a lot of it has to become a reliance on your fellow performers playing with one another and keeping things alive with one another. But also, you know, and actually I spoke to this point to the group the other day. You also have to really decide what it is you are doing through the vehicle of the play. You know, the play is about something, so, and it's about something to the writers. Is it about those exact same elements for you? Is it about something else? What is the lesson you are trying to communicate to the audience through the vehicle of the play? And once you determine that, then, you know, it can make it easier to use the same tool to communicate a message to a different group of people. At that point, the tool does not become stale. The tool is just the tool, and the meeting is what is new. The meeting and the group, the opportunity to share is what is new. And that is where you live.
Well, Hell's Kitchen is moving to Broadway, and I know this is really early, but I wonder what you think will shift as it makes that transition. Obviously, it'll get bigger because the theater is going to be bigger. The stage will be bigger.
I think it will get stronger. You know, we've had the experience now of exposing the play to the audience. And, you know, you work as a creative group internally, and you live with the material, you're in the material. And sometimes you can kind of almost get lost in the material. So then sharing it with audiences is a great opportunity to get you to take a step back out and to look at where there are places where you can strengthen your show. And so I think our show will get stronger.
And I wonder, what inspired you originally to go after a career in acting and singing? And what was the attraction to musicals?
You know, I think there was just an innate compulsion in me. I've known from a very young age that this was the environment that I wanted to live in. This was a career I wanted to pursue. And fortunately, I was in an educational environment that understood the crucial importance of an arts education. So, you know, I had a music class every day. I had a music teacher who put on three musicals a year in the school. You know, I became very familiar with the American musical, and also through that became very drawn to the great Julie Andrews. So that's where my foundation of my love of musicals began. And my greatest artistic inspiration is Michael Jackson, and just the diverse level of his artistry, the height of it, the storytelling through song, dance, theater, film. Those are really what got me into it. Again, like I said, you know, fortunately my educational environment fostered it in a strong and compelling way.
And you went to Columbia University. Did you study theater there?
I did, eventually. I mean, initially I was a split major. I was an econ with a film concentration. But all the while I was taking classes in the theater department and, you know, performing in productions on campus and auditioning for professional shows in the city while I was going to class. So, you know, I was studying other things, but I was continuing to develop my education in performing arts.
And right out of college, right out of Columbia, you played Simba in the national tour of The Lion King.
Yes.
So was that really your first big professional experience?
Yes, it absolutely was. I mean, on a technical level, no, because I booked The Lion King, which began in February of 2003. But right after I booked The Lion King, I also booked an engagement at City Center Encores in the city, which was in the fall of 2002. So I debuted at City Center in House of Flowers, and then I left and joined Lion King.
What was that experience like of playing such an important role in a national tour as you're going across the country?
It was harrowing. I had always been a very natural performer. It was something I did with a great ease and love. But when I was doing The Lion King, I had vocal challenges, particularly with the big song that Simba sings, Endless Night. Throughout the audition process, you know, my success through the song was really about 50-50. Sometimes I would sing it cleanly, and sometimes I would crack and break throughout the end of the song. So I booked the job, and I was grateful for that. But, you know, I did not have much confidence in my ability to do this thing that I had done with such ease before, you know, for one or two weekends, that now I had to do every single day for my job. And so it was a very challenging experience for me.
Well, you created the role of UB Blake and Shuffle Along. And my God, what a cast that was. Audrey McDonald, Brian Stokes Mitchell, Billy Porter. Tell me a little bit about that experience.
That was a wonderful experience. You know, I've been blessed to be a part of a few masterpieces in my life, and Shuffle Along is definitely one of them, and made all the more special because of the cast, you know, and Audra McDonald and Brian Stokes Mitchell in particular. Brian Stokes Mitchell is my theatrical idol, and the first show I saw, Broadway show I saw in New York City, was Ragtime. And so I saw Brian and Audra in that. So it was really a full circle dream come true moment to be in that show with them and Billy and Joshua Henry and that whole wonderful cast.
You were also in Motown the Musical playing Berry Gordy. So UB Blake, Berry Gordy, what's the challenges of creating a role based on a real person? In the case of somebody like Gordy, one we think we know.
you know, they're all different. On one hand, there's a real benefit because with a real person, there's a volume of information about what they did and how they felt. A lot of times there are autobiographies, so there are places to gather a lot of information about people. But the trick with some of them, the blessing, but also the trick is that, you know, if they're alive, you can study them, obviously, but there's just the added pressure of, you know, presenting them in front of themselves. But, you know, I've had the opportunity to play real life figures a number of times, and it's something that I enjoy doing.
Aaron Burr in Hamilton. That had to have been both challenging and so rewarding. And I'd love to have you describe the difference between creating a role from scratch and picking up a role after a performer like Leslie Odom Jr. leaves it.
You know, picking it up from scratch is unique, you know, because it's all your kind of ideas and instincts, and it's a path you craft all your own. Following in someone's footsteps is an interesting thing. I think the initial fear is always that, you know, how will you find a way to make it your own? But with Hamilton, I found myself, you know, finding my own path rather quickly. Obviously, not every step that I covered was my own. You know, I made sure to steal all of Leslie's great stuff. But you know, I found very quickly that because of the richness of the material, my creative brain began to take it in a variety of directions. You know, I found that through the course of playing it over a year, I found myself able to play Burr in a variety of ways and still make the play work and make the character come to life. So, you know, I really enjoyed that.
Hamilton was such a huge hit. I mean, it still is. Did you have to deal in some ways with audience expectations when you walked out on that stage? I'm just so curious about what the relationship is like between a performer and an audience, and especially in something like Hamilton, which is such a big play also in a big Broadway theater. I would imagine it's very different in the public theater, which is smaller and much more intimate. So it's a different kind of relationship you would have with the audience, I would think.
Yes. I mean, different theaters and different plays create different kinds of relationships with the audience. Hamilton, I will say, as far as expectation, you know, the only level of awareness I really had of that was based on the fact that people had such a love for the material that they knew it so well. And so I was very aware of the fact that the moment I made a mistake, I would be exposed and ridiculed online. And so in order to combat that, whenever I would make a mistake, I would immediately go online first in a segment on Instagram that I entitled Burr's Corner, which is named after Winnie the Pooh's Corner, Pooh's Corner. And I would tell the world what I was supposed to say and what I actually said. And that is how I addressed audience expectations.
You also played Judas in the live TV production of Jesus Christ Superstar. What were the key moments of that and the challenges of performing something live on national television or internet? It probably was international, wasn't it?
Yes, it definitely is an international project. And I think the key moments for that were really, you know, figuring out how to merge the live theater elements with the live television technical elements in the space. You know, we rehearsed very much like a Broadway production in the rehearsal space. But once we moved into our set, you know, we really had to merge the theater and the technical elements. And that was the process that I found the most interesting about that project.
And what about vocal preparation associated with songs in there like Heaven on Their Minds, which is, you know, just has this range that's kind of crazy?
Well, fortunately, I was familiar with Heaven on Their Minds. I discovered it in high school, so I had it in my back pocket for a while. In fact, there are one or two times I would go to an audition just to sing it. So fortunately, I had that. And these days, that kind of high octane, you know, high note singing is something that is required of us aspiring leading men. Once I got the job, you know, I was very conscious of building up vocal stamina over the course of the rehearsal process so that when we filmed, you know, I was in a strong and healthy place.
I wonder how your approach to acting shifts between your work on stage and your work in television. There's obviously Jesus Christ Superstar, but you were also in the TV series Power. How does it shift?
You know, a lot of the elements are the same. The foundational elements are the same, you know, in preparation, trying to understand the script and character and story, and then the mechanics of how the show work, whether that's a theatrical show or a television show, the mechanics and structure of how the show is set up. And then from there, you know, the difference in television is because it changes, you know, every 2 weeks, you know, per episode. There's a kind of a different level of memorization, of practical application of your practice, and also kind of like individual rehearsal practice, because you have to show up on set prepared to do a thing that you haven't had weeks to rehearse and prepare, which is what you get to do in theater.
I would also think in television, there's so much waiting around.
Oh, yes. There's definitely a lot of waiting around. It's difficult to immerse yourself in a process in television. So, you know, your individual process as an actor really has to develop.
You've also made your mark, and a very prominent one, as a producer. What made you decide you wanted to move into that aspect of theater?
It was a pretty natural evolution. You know, you start out as a performer wanting to get mastery over your lines and your musical notes, and then you want mastery over your scene, and then over the act, over the play. And the more you seek to understand how to communicate your message to the audience, the more concerned you become with the tools that are involved in that. All right, well, I want to walk over here, and I want the lights to look like this, and I want it to do that. And it's like, well, why can't we do that? Or why can't we do that? Or who's in charge of that? And so naturally, you know, you kind of expand outward and outward further and further as you get to the point of, all right, well, it's the producer who gets to make these decisions. So that's the position you want to seek. And additionally, you know, you put a certain level of creative input and energy into a production, and you want to be able to benefit financially off of that even after you left the stage. And so then, you know, that's a lot of where that development comes from.
Well, you are a Tony Award-winning producer for Hedwig and the Angry Inch. What drew you to that show? And talk about your vision for that production and how that manifested.
Well, you know, the vision for the production really belongs to David Fincher, who's the lead producer on the project. But I was familiar with the property, and I knew that it had never made it to Broadway, but it had a very big audience. And I thought that the casting was spectacular. And so I thought it had a real shot of being a fantastic production, and I'm glad we were able to be a part of it.
And I wonder if that experience influenced subsequent career decisions that you've made, or ways that you think about theater more now that you've been deeply involved in this other aspect of it.
Oh, absolutely. Expanding my participation in different aspects of the business has definitely diversified my understanding of the kinds of things I want to be involved in, the kinds of partners with whom I want to be involved, the impact of work. And so it's definitely had an impact on how I look at myself as a creative artist.
You're in Hell's Kitchen at the Public Theater, but you're gearing up for Here for the Holidays, a concert at Ginny's Supper Club in Harlem in December 18th. What's the backstory? How did this come to be?
Oh, well, so the Classic Theater of Harlem, it is their holiday benefit concert. And one of the directors of the Classic Theater is a colleague of mine, Ty Jones. We've known each other, you know, kind of throughout the New York theater scene in general, but also, you know, Ty starred on Power with me. And since we've done this show, you know, we've kept in close contact, and we did some work earlier in the year, with the Classic Theater of Harlem, and Ty asked me if I, you know, wanted to join them for their holiday benefit, which is being hosted by Ethan Hawke, and I was happy to do so. So December 18th, we will be at Ginny's Supper Club, toasting the Classic Theater of Harlem.
Putting a concert together is like telling a story. So I'm curious, what story are you looking to tell with Here for the Holidays?
The story I'm looking to tell with Here for the Holidays is the story of fighting to be present, despite the present moment maybe not meeting your expectations. Not letting the disappointment in your expectations block you from the blessings of the present. In efforts to do that, we are all going to work to be here for the holidays.
And you are doing this while you're doing 8 shows a week.
Yes, ma'am. Which,
and you're taking the time to talk to me now, so double appreciation there. You're also a political advocate. You're co-founder of the We Are Foundation. Can you tell me about the work of the foundation?
Well, you know, the foundation was founded to use the power of art to bridge the gaps between communities. And, you know, a large part of our initial work was working to connect people to the power of the vote. So voter education, local voter education, and education amongst school programs and arts education programs to communicate people the intersection between politics and art and activism. And, you know, this largely we've worked in areas like Miami, Jacksonville, Detroit, and D.C., working to kind of spread that message and communicate that in conjunction with other organizations and programs.
Every actor, every performer faces challenging moments throughout their career. And I'm wondering if you can share one of those moments and how you met that moment.
Yes. You know, as I stated before, you know, The Lion King was my first job, and it is to date the most challenging professional experience because I had vocal challenges. And so when I went out to do the job, because my audition process was chancy, was spotty, I was excited that I got the job, but I lacked confidence. I was anxious at my ability to, you know, replicate my performance on a regular basis. And that anxiety made me tight and constricted my voice and had me sounding vocally poor throughout the rehearsal process, which was very embarrassing. It was a very public process. You know, they got me a voice teacher, which I was embarrassed by. And eventually they thought the challenges were so bad that they thought they should transpose the song Endless Night down a half a step, which I was ashamed of. Though they assured me that that was not the first time they had done it. And they actually were currently on Broadway performing the song down a half a step. But they wanted me to kind of stop worrying about the song so that I didn't worry about my performance. And they were correct. It did help me. We opened the show. And I felt good. But then they returned 3 months later, the creative team, and they said, you know, we think you sound great. We think we'd like to move the song back up into the original key. And, you know, one thing I had discovered in their absence is that when I would work with the voice teacher, sometimes he would forget to play the song in the lower key. He would play it in the higher key, and I would sing the song with great ease. So we recognized that it was not a vocal issue I was having, but a mental issue. And so when the creative team came back and said they wanted to move the song back up, I told them to do it, but they could not tell me when they were going to do it. So obviously each night that week, I thought the song was higher, but they moved it up on a Thursday night and I sang the song successfully, and I never had a problem since. And backstage, the whole cast gave a huge cheer for me in celebration of my triumph. And I am always deeply forever grateful to them for their support for me during those trying times.
What do you love about theater?
I love the community cooperational element of theater, and I love the inspirational, aspirational element of theater. Those are the things, you know. Art is the most exponentially transformative tool that we have as a culture and a community. And I think theater is an ultimate synthesis of those elements.
Brandon, thank you so much. Thank you for giving me your time, and thank you for your extraordinary work.
You're quite welcome. I appreciate it.
That was actor, singer, and producer Brandon Victor Dixon. Many thanks to the Public Theater for the excerpt for Not Even the King. Hell's Kitchen is running at the Public until January 14th. It will move to Broadway in the spring. Brandon's benefit concert for the Classical Theater of Harlem takes place on December 18th. We'll have links to the Public Theater, the Classical Theater of Harlem, and Brandon's not-for-profit, the We Are Foundation, in our show notes. You've been listening to Artworks, produced at the National Endowment for the Arts. Follow us wherever you get your podcasts and leave us a rating on Apple. It helps other people who love the arts to find us. For the National Endowment for the Arts, I'm Josephine Reed. Thanks for listening.